Serge Prokofiev lived from 1891 to 1953. A Russian composer and pianist who had toured much of the world, Prokofiev is probably best known for his delightful children's piece called Peter and the Wolf. On this tape, we are going to approach Prokofiev three different ways. First, we will briefly review his life. Second, we will discuss resolved dissonance and unresolved dissonance as used in Prokofiev's compositions and the works of other composers. Third and finally, we will discuss his compositional style. Serge Prokofiev was born to a wealthy family, his father being an agricultural engineer who managed a large estate in the Ukraine. His mother was a well-educated woman who also happened to be a very good pianist. One evening, when Prokofiev was 5 years old, he heard his family discussing a famine in India. He went over to the piano and composed a little piece in honor of the Indian people. He played it for his parents in the key of F major, but without the B-flat, because he was afraid to touch the black keys. His proud mother wrote the piece on paper and showed him how much better it sounded with a B-flat. He was so impressed with how his mother had written his composition, he began composing more. Prokofiev was an only child. Now, I'm not saying that just because Prokofiev was an only child, he was a brat. I came from a family of three boys, and I was frequently called a brat. And I deserve to be called a brat. The fact is, Prokofiev was an only child, and he happened to be a brat. Most people grow out of being brats. Prokofiev thrived on it, developed a career around it. He grew older, but he didn't grow up. In his adult life, when people would come up to praise him for his concerts by shaking his hand and saying, "It is such a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Prokofiev," Prokofiev would grumble back, "Well, it isn't a pleasure for me," and walk away. Like Beethoven, he had a knack for offending people and saying exactly what he thought. He was frequently rude and uncaring for the feelings of others. Prokofiev's mother was his first teacher. When she had taught him all she could, a teacher was brought in to train the boy. At age 13, the teacher strongly urged the Prokofievs to send their boy to the St. Petersburg Conservatory for training. The father and mother were very reluctant to send their only child away at such an early age, but consented out of an interest for the boy's future. Life was probably a lot more peaceful at the Prokofiev estate, but not at the conservatory. Prokofiev, who spent the next 10 years at the conservatory, proved to be one of its most unruly students. His piano teacher, one of the finest pianists and teachers of the day, threatened to expel him from school if he didn't stop criticizing her and refusing to do what she had asked. Prokofiev humbled himself briefly. When he entered the conservatory at age 13, he was stubborn, obstinate, and cocky, but also very intelligent and talented. He came with 4 operas under his belt, a symphony, 2 sonatas, and many other short piano works. Being the youngest student at the conservatory, he attracted a lot of attention. Everything about him attracted attention, from his own looks to the way he would criticize teachers for the poor way, in his opinion, that they taught their classes. The years passed. More compositions came through his pen. Proudly, he confided to a friend that he did not show his compositions to a certain teacher because they would probably expel him from class. No doubt this pleased him greatly. A young teacher named Miyakovsky befriended the teenager and took Prokofiev under his wing. Together, they explored various avant-garde composers. Avant-garde is a term that is used frequently in music. It means front guard or front lines. In the military, the front lines are the soldiers that see the most vigorous part of the battle. They see it first, they fight it first. They blaze the trail for others to follow. In music, the avant-garde are those composers who are trying out new compositional ideas. I say new compositional ideas, others may say strange or weird. Rachmaninoff was not an avant-garde composer, nor was Tchaikovsky. Bartok was, Stravinsky was, Schoenberg was. Presently, Stockhausen and Boulez are. Throughout most of this century, most composers have wanted to be avant-garde. What type of composer do you think Prokofiev wanted to be? Avant-garde or traditional? Yes, the avant-garde suited his style and personality best. Prokofiev and Miyakovsky not only studied new music together, they would also attend the new concert series of avant-garde music in St. Petersburg together. At the age of 17 on New Year's Eve, Prokofiev made his own debut as a pianist and composer at the avant-garde concert series. The audience was very appreciative. The newspaper critics, however, denounced his music as being ultra-modern and unintelligible. No doubt this pleased Prokofiev. For years he did his best to live up to the image. At age 23, Prokofiev won the Rubinstein Prize for piano playing. He won it with a performance of his own composition, his first piano concerto. He later wrote down his remembrances of the concert. Quote, "The conductor bowed and shortly reappeared with a tall young man of extraordinary appearance. He had white blonde hair, a small head with a large mouth, very thick lips, and very long dangling arms ending in a bruiser's powerful hands. After sitting down and adjusting the piano stool with an abrupt jerk, Prokofiev let go with an unrelenting muscular exhibition of a completely novel kind of piano playing. This young man's music and his performance of it reminded me of the onrushing forwards in one of my unfortunate soccer experiences. Nothing but unrelenting energy and the athletic joy of living. There was frenetic applause, and no less than 6 flower horseshoes were handed to Prokofiev, who was now greeted with astonished laughter. He bowed clumsily, dropping his head almost to his knees, and recovered with a yank." End quote. When the Bolshevik Revolution broke out in 1917, Prokofiev wanted no part of it. Like many of those who could afford it, he left for the United States. He had heard that audiences in the United States were generally open-minded. After his arrival in America, Prokofiev was much discussed, but not very well liked. Critics called him the Bolshevik pianist, with the steel fingers, steel biceps, steel triceps, a tonal steel trust. Feeling rather rejected, Prokofiev left America, though he returned several times over the years to do some concert tours. For a few years, Prokofiev made his home base in France. Things were going fairly well for Prokofiev. Not gloriously well, like they were for Rachmaninoff, but fairly well. But he soon grew tired of trying to get his compositions performed by orchestras and opera houses. Russia invited him back home and guaranteed him concerts and publishers. In spite of the cruel reign of Stalin, Prokofiev, who was politically naive, decided to go home. Of this decision, his friend and fellow composer, Vernon Duke, said, "I asked Serge a difficult question, then uppermost in my mind. I wanted to know how he could live and work in the atmosphere of Soviet totalitarianism." Serge was quiet for a moment, and then said quietly and seriously, "Here is how I feel about it. I care nothing for politics. I'm a composer, first and last. Any government that lets me write my music in peace, publishes everything I compose before the ink is dry, and performs every note that comes from my pen, is all right with me. In Europe, we all have to fish for performances, cajole conductors and theater directors. In Russia, they come to me. I can hardly keep up with the demand. What's more, I have a comfortable apartment in Moscow, a delightful house in the country, and a brand new car. My boys go to a fine English school in Moscow." End quote. Stravinsky, another Russian composer who had immigrated to the United States, thought Prokofiev had sold out, sold his freedom for a mess of pottage. Stravinsky was disgusted. Stravinsky said, "He had no success in the United States or Europe for several seasons, while his visit to Russia had been a triumph. When I saw him for the last time in New York in 1937, he was despondent about his financial and artistic fate in France. He was politically naive. When he finally understood his position in Russia, it was too late." End quote. Prokofiev came under the wrath of the Stalin regime in 1948. 5 years later, he died. Interestingly, he died on the same day as Stalin. One of the things that helped many early 20th century composers sound 20th century-ish was their use of dissonance. Dissonance being those sounds that are thought of as being unpleasant. Intervals of seconds and sevenths are thought of as dissonant. Composers used dissonance before the 20th century. So it is not the use of dissonance, but how dissonance was used that made composers sound so modern. Sound confusing? Let me re-explain what I mean two different ways to give you a three-dimensional view of this concept. Not all dissonance is created equal. There is resolved dissonance, as was used by Bach, and there was unresolved dissonance, as was used by Bartok. When Bach used dissonance, you knew that consonance was soon to follow. For example, if we had a second, it could lead to a fourth, and then maybe to a sixth, where we finally feel at rest. Let's listen to a famous chorale harmonized by J.S. Bach. This chorale is loaded with dissonance, but each time it is used, the dissonance is resolved to consonance. He starts out consonant. Here it is. Dissonant, consonant, dissonant, consonant, consonant. Now the next phrase is the same as the first. See if you can hear the two dissonances and their resolution by yourself. Listen. Many of the composers of the 20th century felt that dissonances sounded harsh because people were taught that they were harsh. They thought if people heard enough dissonances, they would no longer sound harsh. So they tried moving from dissonance to dissonance to dissonance to dissonance without resolving to consonance. This is called unresolved dissonance. Let's take a piece by Bartok, for example. He starts out with a minor second. Then he adds a fifth, and then pounds away on it for the next 59 measures. Doesn't even attempt to resolve the dissonance. Listen. After nearly a century of dissonance, people still, mostly, view dissonance as dissonance and not as consonance. We're not as surprised or shocked by it, but it still sounds a little harsh. Prokofiev's approach to dissonance was somewhere between resolved and unresolved. He worked within a tonal framework. He resolved most of his dissonances. He just took a little longer to do it, is all. He would delay the resolution to a consonance. Let's take a look at a piece called Rain and the Rainbow. The first phrase, without the added dissonant notes, sounds like this. Nothing unusual about that, right? Now I will play the same phrase and place the dissonant notes that Prokofiev placed next to the melody notes back in. Listen. In the next phrase, we have a plain old ordinary dominant tonic cadence. Now listen to it with the added dissonance that made him sound so modern at the time. In the next phrase, we have again the dominant tonic in the key of G flat. But add the extra dissonant notes that he placed next to it, and it sounds not like this, but like this. And then back to our dominant tonic in the key of C. Now let's listen to the whole thing put together. Not only did Prokofiev use dissonatized traditional harmony, he also leaned toward traditional forms of the Baroque and Classic period with just enough rhythmic and tonal changes to irritate his listeners. Just enough, that is, until he moved back to Russia. In his autobiography, Prokofiev listed five factors that have guided his compositions. Number one, classicism, which is a use of forms popular during the Baroque and Classic periods. Forms like ABA, the sonata form, the symphony, which is really a sonata for orchestra, and opera. Number two, innovation, a striving for a new musical vocabulary, new sounds, new meaning, as we have discussed with his use of dissonance. He also wanted to express stronger emotions. Like Bartok, Prokofiev frequently treated the piano as a percussive instrument, as opposed to the romantic conception of the piano as a lyric, song-like instrument. A good example of this is the piece he won the Rubinstein Prize with as a young man, his first piano concerto. Also his third piano concerto. You will hear lots of dissonance that helps create the percussive sound and rhythmic energy. The example that you will hear is played by a young and talented high school student, Winston Lee, a student of Paul Polai. The third element Prokofiev strived for in his compositions was the toccata, or motor element, which translates to rhythmic energy. A good example of this is his famous tarantella. Listen to the rhythmic drive and energy, its almost pounding beat. The fourth and final element was the lyric element. Prokofiev could compose some very lovely melodies when he wanted to. He just didn't want to, at least not very often. He wanted to react against the beautiful sweeping melodies of the Romantic period. Consequently, his melodies sometimes sound a bit directionless, almost as if he is searching for the most irritating note possible, and then it goes back into something lovely again. This is a common occurrence with many 20th century composers, a sense of wandering. Here is a mild example from the Grasshopper's Parade. The fifth and final element that he strove for in his compositions was grotesqueness, jesting, or mockery, making fun of things or people. A musical Mad Magazine. That was typical of his character, wasn't it? Well, that is all five of the guidelines that Prokofiev set for himself. Once again, in review, number one was classicism, the use of classical forms. Number two was innovation, a striving for a new musical vocabulary. The third element was the toccata, or motor element, the rhythmic drive, the pounding rhythms. The fourth element was the lyric element. And the fifth and final element that he strove for in his compositions was grotesqueness, jesting or mockery, making fun of things or people. As you study pieces by Prokofiev, see if you can identify one or more of these five guidelines that Prokofiev strove toward in his compositions. And if you're looking for a piece by Prokofiev to choose from to study, there's plenty to choose from. Prokofiev wrote over 100 short piano pieces of all types. He also wrote 9 piano sonatas, of which the 3rd in A minor has been a great favorite with pianists over the years. You might enjoy studying that one. In addition to these works, he wrote 8 operas, 7 ballets, 7 symphonies, 5 piano concertos, 1 cello and 2 violin concertos, 6 cantatas, 2 string quartets and other chamber music, several scores for films, and much, much more. A prolific output.